Hey
Hello.
there. Hi, glad to see you back. Well, if for those who don't know, Ilya is here. Ilya is the founder of previously Team GPT, but now Juma. Is it Juma? Am I pronouncing
Exactly.
correctly? Okay, cool. So yeah, I mean, I'm super glad to see you here. I've been following the journey of the rebrand of this whole thing with OpenAI for a while, as I think quite a few people on LinkedIn. And yeah, finally you have announced the new name, the new message, the new ICP. So I want to dig deeper into this, and I want to also ask you a little bit about the whole like mechanics behind the rebrand, because I've had very few founders talking about a rebrand here on the podcast. And some of them would say, yeah, it was kind of coming and we were preparing the audience for it. And it was the next logical step for you guys. I think it was a bit of a, oh shit, we have to do this now. So yeah, how you did it, and if founders are facing a situation like this, then where do they start? But first things first, maybe let's start with you, a bit of your background, and also what is Juma now?
Okay, thanks so much for inviting me back. My name is Ilya, born and raised in Bulgaria. Right now, I'm working on Juma, which is a marketing super agent, which helps marketing teams get stuff done. Like, this is kind of the overview of what we do. This means analyzing data, generating content, delivering ready-to-use assets, and so on. My background is in online education and training AI models and teaching people to train AI models. I've been in the field for the past 10 years, and I've been actively building, let's say, AI products, AI agents for the past 3 years. We started with Team GPT three years ago, and that's kind of when we last spoke with you. But back then it was a very exciting moment, 2020, in the beginning of 2023, and GPT-4 had just come out, and everybody was kind of tinkering what they can do with the technology. And what we did was we built this internal tool back then, which was allowing us to try different models, evaluate them, see what works, share prompts, and so on. And we naively coded Team GPT because the domain was available and the name was quite cool, if you ask me. But we were always running this risk that maybe it's not okay to be called Team GPT. Like, it was unclear, right? So 3 years ago, it was absolutely unclear. Can your company be called Team GPT when there is ChatGPT? And there were thousands of companies with GPT in the name back then. And to name a few, GPT Engineer later became Lovable. PeopleGPT became Juicebox, which is again an enormous company. And we were kind of like all of the companies that were starting, we were not thinking about naming that much. I remember maybe two months after we started, one of my friends was like, "Oh my God, you have to trademark the name, otherwise they're gonna come and get you." And we trademarked the name in US, UK, and European Union. So we have three trademarks for Team GPT. But, maybe in the next couple of months, about a year after we started, we received this letter from OpenAI, which was like, "You cannot be called Team GPT. This is against like our guidelines, whatever. You have to change your name or else. Like, you don't want to know." I think that the lingo was something like, if you want to avoid lengthy and costly proceedings, you have to kind of act now, and so on. And this is kind of ever since this letter, we were on the clock to kind of change our name in the consequent months.
Yeah, that's like a supervillain movie. But even here, like we had folks from SlideGPT here, and ever since, because I already knew that you were in the process of rebranding, I was like, how do they choose who to go against? Like, why is it you guys but not them? And Yeah, what is the process there? Is everyone who has GPT in the name going to rebrand eventually? Anyway, so you did it. Great job. Long story short,
thank you.
I'm sure there is some things that we cannot mention here. But yeah, I think a lot of founders think that rebrand is something that is going to kill the company, because I mean, it's a story that you've been working on. It's something that you're associated with. It's your personal, here's what I am, a founder of Team GPT. So how did you approach it? Like, again, like I mentioned at the beginning, if there is a founder looking at pretty much the same situation, maybe, where do they start?
Yeah. So the main thing is, why do you want to change your name, right? And there was this really cool metaphor that somebody told me. There are two reasons why you can change your name. First, you're running away from something. And that was our case. We're running away from GPT name. And the second reason is you're running towards something. So, you know, you have a new market, new ICP, you're merging two companies and you want to make it one big company and so on. So for us, it was basically we were running away from GPT, but we didn't know what we were running towards. And that was very problematic, because how do you change your name and when you don't know who you're for, who's going to buy your product, what is the product going to be in a couple of months? So internally, even though we knew we need to change our name, we didn't even know where to begin. In the beginning, it was not even pressing. It was like, okay, we received this letter. Nobody is doing anything. But is it actually good for the business? And then over time, you would see that it was starting to hurt our company, our brand, that we're called Team GPT. People were constantly comparing us to ChatGPT. Oh, ChatGPT is doing this. You definitely have that. You're like, no, we have GPT in the name, but we're a different product. And it was becoming harder and harder to explain. Some people were taking us for ChatGPT when we were not, and then they felt lied to. And this is a very bad place to be. You don't want to be the one that people label as a scammer, or pretending that to be someone you're not. So internally, we're like, okay, we're on the clock. We have to change the name. When do we change the name? And the simple answer, it was when you're closer to product market fit, when you know who you're serving, when you know kind of what kind of product are you building for the next 5-10 years. And I put this KPI, the KPI was, okay, we have to reach $1 million in ARR. So once we do $1 million per year, this is the time at which we know enough about our ideal customer profile to make this move. And I think it made a lot of sense, because I was thinking about this $1 million ARR as kind of a weight. So we're weighing all of our users and we're seeing who is paying us what. And then it kind of became clear that out of $1 million per year, let's say 500 to 700 per year are coming from marketing use cases. And this kind of the time we decided, okay, so we're serving marketers at the end of the day. It seems that we're serving it doesn't matter what we think we're serving, the people who are actually paying us are marketers. So how about we fully focus on them and we start building a product just for them? And this is kind of the moment in which we were like, okay, we know who we're serving. We know what the product is going to be in the next X years. What is a name which fits this product? And this is kind of the moment we kicked it off. And yeah, it took about 6 months, I would say, from the first day actively thinking about the rebranding. We opened this channel internally and we said, okay, throw in good names over here. And we gathered 300 ideas for a name. And yeah, basically we had to choose one at some point.
Yeah. Is JMA short for junior marketer?
for very, very good question. It's short for just marketing.
Just
and
okay.
Yeah, and we were thinking about it. The main thing that we wanted to build is this. So the premise is the following: AI can do kind of anything, and thanks to products like Lovable, anybody can build a website, right? And we think that anybody can also market anything if they have the right tool. And this is kind of the whole premise behind Juma. You create an account, you give it a task, and then it does a bunch of different, you know, activities that helps you market something. In the case of a podcast like this one, it's not able to do it right now, but it should be able to, you know, take your podcast, take all your past episodes, analyze them well, give you ideas for future episodes, future guests, future scripts. Once a podcast is recorded, you know, you're cutting it in these, you know, short clips, right? Well, that's not too hard of a task. Like, you should be able to, you know, take the video, put it inside and say, help me market it, you know, like I need to market it. And then it takes the video, cuts the clips, maybe connects to your social media, maybe schedules them on its own, and so on. And in the realm of, you know, AI and AI agents, there is no agent which is doing this right now. So there are coding agents like Cursor. There are, you know, you can build a website with Lovable, but nobody has truly solved it for marketers. And looking at our usage, we already saw that, you know, people are solving hundreds of different use cases which are adjacent to these. And we said, okay, let's help them solve the full spectrum of marketing problems.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I felt a little bit of pain, of course, when you said anybody can market anything. But, but okay, let's go with it. But yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the podcast. I actually am getting quite a few inquiries to check out the tools that do exactly that. So for example, we're on Riverside, right? And yeah, if anybody from Riverside is listening, again, not very happy with you guys, but still here. I mean, yeah. Anyway, on Riverside, there is really nifty thing that I use sometimes as is, sometimes as inspiration. And it's exactly that. It's like telling AI, okay, I want clips about AI, about bootstrapping, about M&A, whatever. And it gives me the clips. So that's amazing. And like you said, if it could be like full circle, then, you know, do automated branded look or, you know, scheduling or, you know, analytics, everything. That could be really, really cool. And there is no such tool, but there are tools that are being built for that specific use case. And I think it's really, really cool. I think the number of platforms, SaaS products that are being built for marketers is incredible. And I love tinkering with them. What's that one use case where you were like, okay, this is something where we should double down, maybe something again that marketers especially like to pay for, and that is actually changing your product as well with the positioning?
Amazing question. This is the perfect question. Yeah. So for us, this has been data analysis of marketing data. So it turns out that marketing people are not very good at analyzing data. On the contrary, they hate it. This is kind of the worst bit of their job when they have to take all the, you know, so they execute the campaign and everything is cool and they have just marketed and then they have to look at the data and see how well they did. And no matter if this is Google Ads data, Meta Ads data, social media performance, or like you've posted 20 posts and you want to compare how they did, marketers hate doing it. It takes a lot of time for them. And worst of all, they don't know where to start sometimes. When in the case of, let's say, agencies or freelancers, it's a part of their job to do this reporting all the time. So it's this repeatable, time-consuming activity. And when we decided to focus on marketers, we were like, okay, AI is kind of very good out of the box for content creation, let's say brainstorming strategy, whatever. But it's going to be super cool if you can actually add data to all of this and start doing data-driven, let's say, post ideas, data-driven content creation, data-driven whatever, and also all types of reporting and so on. So this is kind of the use case that we decided to solve, and it turns out that everybody loves it. And the marketers, what they want to do is they want to go in a platform, in this case, let's say in Joomla, and they want to drop in a bunch of files and then let the AI do the magic for them. And yeah, so yeah, I would say data analysis was this key thing.
You're up to changing the product with some integrations, maybe partnerships, something that allows you to not basically have to also be connected with a bunch of other tools and download all the reports and upload them to Joomla, but basically just plug everything in.
Yeah, so we're thinking about this.
Just FYI.
I know. So I've been doing this myself for some years and it has been super annoying. But so in the field of AI, we all hope that through technology like MCP servers or stuff like this, you would be able to seamlessly connect these. For some of them, it works. Let's say HubSpot has a very good MCP. So basically, if you're using HubSpot and you want to bring in your data from HubSpot, this is, let's say, 50% solved as a problem. Ahrefs has a pretty good one, pretty good connector. So if you want to enrich whatever you're doing with keywords data, this will happen relatively easy. When it comes to Google Ads, Facebook Ads, they do have these MCP servers and connectors and whatever, but they're not very good. So currently, I would say one of the best ways to do it is if you export a CSV file or an Excel file, it does the job well. With the connectors, we're in a very interesting time in technology where up until now we were connecting in one way through APIs and, you know, let's say live connections and whatever. And now we're moving towards this kind of AI first, AI native way. And many platforms are not there yet. Yeah, which means, if I have to answer your question, some of the integrations we're doing natively and we're, you know, doing all the legwork. Others, we expect the industry will get there, that it becomes much easier to pull data from these places.
Okay.
But it's definitely an issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's, you know, it's a very common joke that all I want for Christmas is to make sure all the dashboards and all the data on every platform looks the same. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So like, I'm a very not a data-driven person, let's say. And I have basically two dashboards I look at. And it's already annoying.
What do you look at?
I look at Google, at G4, and then I look at Dash This.
I mean, do you care about impressions? Do you care about how...
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, good question. So it's mostly about impressions because even though it's been, 3 years since I've been working on the brand, it's still very much about brand awareness and visibility and making sure that we are still there on top of mind, because taking it further down the funnel, there are other people who take care of that. So I try to just make sure that we're out there and people know that we're out there.
Okay. And that this number is growing, the number of people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's growing again in the very right place, right? It's not just growing, right? I don't want, let's face it, it's nice that startups in India starting to learn about SaaS Group, but we're not working with startups in India. So it's cool if the impressions are going up, yay, vanity metrics, but does it do anything? No. So I would rather have it grow in the US somewhere in, I don't know, Portland or Colorado. Mm. So.
Okay, I see.
So yeah, so that's why I asked about integrations and stuff like that, because basically when you can plug all the information in the one place and kind of have this massive thing to look at, it's, I think it would make it so much easier. And maybe, you know, if you find some mistakes, whatever, something that you're missing in data, that would be great. But anyway, you'll have to talk to a way more data-driven person about that than me.
No, on the contrary, we want to make you the person who can, you know, you're sitting on the data, right? You have the data, but you don't know what to do with it. And through these AI agents, and forget about LLMs, but like through AI agents that can generate code on the fly to analyze data, you can ask literally any question to your data and create some code which analyzes the data. And this works. This technology works. And this is how Lovable creates websites. This is how Cursor is, you know, developing. This is how Manus just sold itself to Meta. I don't know if you saw this, but do you know Manus?
Not sure. Enlighten me.
Okay. Manus was another startup which rebranded. So basically they were called Monica AI. And they were doing this Chrome extension, Chinese company with like 50, 60 people. And then Manus realized that, you know, they're getting out of business. So they stopped doing whatever they're doing and they focused the whole company on building a super agent. This is how they called it. And they launched Manus in March. They were doing less than $1 million in ARR. Today, they're doing $100 million in ARR. So fastest company ever to reach from 1 to 100 million, faster than Lovable even. And today Meta announced that they bought them for $2 billion or something like this. But yeah, anyways, I think more and more startups in our field, the models are now allowing us to solve much more use cases in a much more free form. So I think many SaaS companies no longer makes sense, and it's gonna be AI agents kind of coming for them.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see. I don't know. I'm very Let's excited to talk about this, because yeah, some say, you know, it's all vibe coding now, and some say, we don't do that. Like we still go manual, and we still like to tinker with the code and to make sure that we know what's there, because at the end of the day, you spend pretty much the same time, maybe sometimes debugging, as you are when you're just coding. So yeah, it's really curious how, because now we also have this tool that, like you said, analyzes everything that's been said on the podcast, and it's been almost 300 episodes, and I'm collecting all those opinions. And I think it's roughly 50-50. At this point, people who say, yeah, no more SaaS. SaaS is not dead, but going to be dead very soon. And people who say, yeah, no, there is still room to grow. And, you know, not everyone figured out the agents either. Yeah, it's a very fun time to be alive. Anyway. Go.
It definitely is fun. I've been thinking about it around Christmas now. Like, would I do anything else? No, not really. Like, I can't imagine myself working on something which is not an AI agent in 2026. I think this is the most exciting thing that anybody can be working on. I'm very concerned about, you know, first, humanity and individuals. Second, all of the software that has been built up until now is being completely rewritten right now. And it's very unclear to me how the industry will progress. But truth of the matter is that currently one very good developer together with AI can write 99% of the code that has been ever written. It doesn't matter. You don't need to be an expert. Now you just need to be just good enough plus AI, and you can build anything. And this is really crazy.
This episode is sponsored by Reworkful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Reworkful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Reworkful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.reworkful.com. Academy.reworkful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, some tech people have been very skeptical here about, you know, good enough plus AI, because then if we assume that AI is better enough to take the rest away, then maybe that's where the risk is, because then, you know, maybe you don't understand the rest that it's doing, but it might also be just a bit too philosophical. It's almost New Year. We're getting in the gray area.
Yeah, sorry.
But I also just wanted to ask you, because, you know, it's great. I love, to be honest, I have to give it to you and your marketing team. I love to see how you guys are working on LinkedIn. If you're posting something, it's the entire company. It's coming from the brand's page. It's coming from your page. It's coming from pretty much everyone's page who's involved in Juma. And I really admire that support on the brand level. But, you know, we all know at the same time that LinkedIn is nice and shiny. But tell me how actually the rebrand affected the growth, and where did you maybe find the dip and how you got out?
Yeah, so we're very big on SEO, and SEO has been amounting for most of our growth throughout our lifetime. And when you change your domain name, all of this is at risk. So the day after the rebrand, our traffic fell 95%. So we lost almost all the traffic that we have overnight. And we were prepared for this. And we've been, you know, doing this technical SEO, and we've been, you know, doing all the redirects and doing all the best practices. But 1 month later, we're still at probably 80% down. So we have lost a lot of our traffic because of this. Meaning, we're not growing because we're actually losing. We have lost a lot of our leads. On the day of the rebrand, nobody cared about it. So in the sense, like, people were excited, but they didn't care about the product. And like the weeks after, people started coming to me and they were telling me, "Oh, I finally understand what you're doing. Like I didn't know what it is." And I think this narrowing down into one ICP or certain use cases has really, really helped us clear up the value proposition. At the same time, it repelled a bunch of people. So we will also be dealing with churn in the next few months. Clients that have been with us for, let's say, 2 years, they're like, "We're not very aligned with your new direction, right?" And one of these companies, you know, they're in the insurance business, and they're like, "You guys are doing marketing, and we kind of don't care." So basically, you rebrand and you lose all your lead generation. You start seeing churn. New people are, they're excited to see what you're about, but they still don't have a mental model for what you are. Anywhere I go, I say, "Yeah, my name is, I'm CEO, co-founder of Juma," and whoever knows me from before, they're like, "Oh, like Team GPT, like you're Ilya from Team GPT for me. Like, it's so strange to hear you say a different name." And it actually takes time, takes adjustment for everybody. So I would say the first month of the rebrand has mainly hit our growth. But brand is an asset, right? So you're investing in brand because you want 5 years from now, 10 years from now, this to be a strong brand with a strong identity. When people see you, you have to stand out. When people see people from our team, we need to be this super, this subculture that, like, we need to have our own culture. We need to be very distinct from the others. The product needs to be differentiated. The product needs to be synonymous with whatever we're solving, right? And all of this takes a lot of time. So, yeah, I would say first month after rebrand, very painful for growth, but we're already seeing the good signs and the good signals. People are saying, we finally understand what you do. And I think this is most important.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, it can be super exciting for you and for your marketing team. You basically start from scratch. You can build it from ground up because there's a new name, a new brand. You can play around with it. So yeah, it's really exciting. And like I said, it's been fun to see you all so far posting, really like trying to get people excited about what you're going to do. So yeah, I think just keep up the good work. But yeah, and I have obviously one more question because, I mean, everyone says, hey, we use AI for everything and there is AI for coding and brainstorming and marketing and whatnot. So you have been posting about using AI operationally a lot as well. But I think the quote was still, don't trust AI blindly. So there is a guardrail somewhere that you're using. And I wonder where it is because you are an AI person. I think we've established that on our previous podcast that you love AI and you want to use it everywhere, basically. So where is the hard stop for you? Where do you think there should be a human in the loop?
Well, it really depends on, okay, the more core activities to you, the more you need to be human about it. Let's say in this podcast, again, you cannot put an AI Anna to lead it. Like, this is out of the question forever and ever. Like, this will never be an AI Anna. Because the moment this happens, you lose all the trust, credibility, and whatever. But once we stop recording, literally any single activity can be done by AI from this moment on. And in the same way, if, you know, let's say you're writing code and, you know, there's this debate again, like, oh, will AI write the code or not? Well, the stuff that we're doing right now, they have not been done ever before. So AI is not very good at, you know, coming up with them. So the core activity of our company, a person has to think about it, like, and do some work. When we talk about LinkedIn posting and, let's say, thought leadership, I don't write my posts with AI. And this is very weird to many people, but if I want to write my original thoughts, they cannot be AI. And to me, it's very important to have my own voice and, you know, be able to voice it and whatever. I do all my promo posts with AI. So, like, for instance, this podcast, again, I'm giving this example because it's top of mind right now. But after it's out and I have to promote it, I'll probably have AI write the post promoting it. But if I'm doing a deep dive,
No, sorry,
it's going to do a better job than me. I'm going to tell it, you know, watch the video, understand the video and write a post, which sounds like me. And it saves me a lot of time because whatever original I had to say, I said it on the podcast, right? So I don't need to be original even on LinkedIn afterwards. So long story short, if core activities, they will continue being, you know, human-led, and everything which is supporting will be kind of offloaded to the AI. This is how I see, this is where the line is for me. Yeah. And if you're with the data analysis, this is a supporting function for you. This is not the core. Your core job is not to analyze the data of your podcast. But if you had something that can analyze the data, this would be super helpful to you. And this is true for, like, every person in the world has stuff like this.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's a very healthy approach to it. I would absolutely support that. Like, again, there is something good to Riverside. It does give you a pretty good, they call it, magic episode. I know. I'm like busting its balls every time, but somehow at the end of the year, every year for 3 years, there is something wrong with Riverside. And out of 6 of my last podcasts this month, 2, I was able to record 2. The rest of them failed. So that's why I explained it. I'm not just
that's not good.
That's not good, right? But the ones that are recorded, you can press a button that says something like magic episode. And it does a pretty good job. So it's not there. And, you know, when we repeat ourselves and when I say, oh, no, stop, Ilya, can we rewrite this? AI on Riverside will detect it and will delete it, which is amazing. You know, and it's, I'm not the one doing the editing anymore, but I'm sure it saves a ton of time to my editor. So yeah, there are things that absolutely amazing to be able to just outsource to AI. There, you know, I'm waiting for the time when I can offload the washing machine stuff.
The washing machines are almost there. Did you yeah. Heard about this robot? It's called Neo, I think.
Yes, but it's a robot. I don't know. It's weird.
So Neo can do anything at your house, but if it doesn't know something, you put it in learning mode, and then there is an Indian guy in India controlling the robot while it learns to, let's say, put the dishwasher. And basically in their terms and services, it basically says it could be a real person, you know, watching around your house and doing the stuff, but you have to be okay with it.
Yeah, not there yet. I'm not there yet.
No.
Maybe technology is, I'm not.
But yeah, it will get there pretty quickly. There.
That's true. I was watching this one reel on Instagram, and there was a girl saying, these are AI tools that I cannot live without anymore. And I was like, okay, well, maybe she's going to talk about things like, I don't know, Riverside, the script, because she's, you know, a creative person. But she started listing, you know, Whoop. And then there is, I don't even remember what it's called, but it's like a necklace thing that listens to you all the time. But there is also a thing that can be at your home that listens to you again all the time and gives you a transcript of your day. And there are all the things that basically are listening to you all the time, and they're like, nope, no, not for me, thank you. Not there yet.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I actually hate these devices. I have some and I try to use them, but just the moment you have it here and people look at you, and this changes the conversation. People are not willing to say the same things to you because they're being recorded, and to me, this actually hurts real life connections.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I just got the Meta glasses with the cameras and everything, and they're so much cooler than I expected. They're really, really, they did a great job with this. And you have all of these point of view videos that now you can take, which to me changes content creation completely, because you know, you put the glasses and you can go around and you see all the stuff. And let's say I was doing these videos on Christmas and it's my whole family around the table, and I put the Meta glasses and it's like, basically you're sitting at the table. This is the point of view that the glasses are giving you. And I'm very excited about some parts of this, of the technology. Others are just creepy.
Exactly. But all right, you know how this podcast ends every time. So what has been, I mean, it's a perfect time for this kind of question. It's December 30. What has been the biggest win and the biggest failure this year for, maybe for you as a founder, maybe for Juma?
Biggest win has definitely been finding our focus. This is by far the most useful thing we could do. And we've been on the path to product market fit for quite some time. And I think we're very, very close. We know who we're selling to, what we're selling to, so on. We also know how to get it done. It's very exciting to be in this not so exploratory and a bit more, you know, okay, let's get our heads down and get it done kind of place. Worst thing that... The worst thing for us was that we had to change the composition of our team. So with the new focus and our old team didn't make sense completely. So we had to lay off about 20% of the people. And as we grow again, we'll basically, these positions will not get filled because they were more enterprise focused, let's say. And this was kind of the previous focus of the company. And right now for us, it makes sense to either add more, you know, developers or more marketing people rather than, let's say, enterprise salespeople and so on. So this recomposition of the team was very painful to me in particular and to the people who got laid off, I imagine. But yeah, the good thing is that we have more focus. Bad thing is that because of this focus, some things had to change in the company. And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's usually something about people in this part of the podcast. It's very sad, but hopefully, you know, with new focus, you'll find new growth and there will be new opportunities for the team as well. So the last one is always about a hack. So maybe there is a new hack this year that you loved that worked for you and you think other founders would appreciate.
Me, I just got this done yesterday. So we analyzed all of our co-recordings and we've been recording all our calls with Fathom and similar meeting recorders. So we got them together and we analyzed all of them to identify pain points, customer objections, common problems that our users have, which will now inform our product roadmap. It will inform our sales calls. It will inform like other people on the team how we do stuff. And we just finished this and I'm very excited about it. And I think that people are sitting on a lot of data from, especially from meeting recordings, and they need to be using it. And it's not that hard. If you don't know what to do, send me a text and I'll let you know. But yeah, this has been very kind of insightful and cool to analyze 1,500 calls. That was really cool.
Yeah, that's what we did with the podcast this year. And it's been a wow effect, really. Because, I mean, honestly remember most of the conversations when they were about, at least to some degree. But when I put them together to kind of analyze the trends and what people mostly care about and how AI affects SaaS in their opinion, it was really, really interesting to see how it just plays out on a bigger scale. So yeah, I can only imagine what you got from 1,000 calls from customers.
Yeah, it's definitely something a person cannot comprehend. The patterns that emerge are just for the eyes of the AI at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing that and for the story. I mean, like I said, it's been really fun to see how you guys approach it together as a team. So really excited to see how it's going to play out in 2026. So happy new year. And see you then.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
See you.
Take care.
Thanks for listening. SaaS Unbound is brought to you by SaaS Group. We're a long-term home for great B2B SaaS. We buy, keep the team and brand DNA, and help with the boring stuff like hiring and finance so founders can truly focus on building great products. If you're a founder who'd like to be featured or explore an acquisition, reach out through the form on our website or email me at anna@saas.group.